summer in July, a homeowner in Wildwood, New Jersey, was doing some landscaping around his house when he discovered something unexpected. As he dug into the soil, he unearthed a hidden cache of money. $10 and $20 bills that were rolled very tightly in brown paper and then tied up with string and then wrapped in burlap. And he found two of these bundles that were buried in glass jars. And the amount of money totaled about $2,000. And all the bills were dated 1934. Now, the mystery of this buried treasure has not been solved, but given the date on the bills, the leading theory is that in 1934, at the height of the Great Depression, somebody felt that their money would be safer buried under the house than being placed in a bank. And adjusting for inflation, that $2,000 today would be worth $44,000. Somebody buried $44,000 in the ground and lost it. I was reminded of this story this week as I was studying our reading from the Gospel of Matthew that also features money buried in the ground. And in this reading, we find a parable that we call the parable of the talents. And the entire parable, as told by Jesus, is based on a preposterous premise. The parable tells of a man who is about to go away for an undetermined period of time. And before he leaves, he calls in three of his servants and places on them the responsibility over his wealth, or at least a part of it. And to one servant, he hands over 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and the third servant receives just a single talent. And the man gives to each of these, as the parable explains, according to their ability. And then the man leaves town for parts unknown. Now, a man leaving town on a trip, that's not preposterous. That's not the preposterous part of this parable. However, entrusting his servants with 8 talents of wealth, that is, because a single talent alone is a preposterous amount of money. So what is a talent? Well, talent is a Greek word that we have appropriated in English. And today we use it to describe the special abilities that some people possess. A talent for music, a talent for art, a talent for juggling chainsaws. But in this parable, the meaning of talent is money, an absurd amount of money. So how much is a talent? Well, a talent of gold, a talent is a weight of gold. That one understand about 75 pounds. But in their day, they would have recognized this as being equivalent to 6,000 denarius. And a denarius is a day's wage for a laborer. So a common laborer working all day would have to work for 6,000 days to accumulate enough for a talent. It's a lot of money. Back of the envelope figuring tells me that a talent today, somewhere in the range of $1 million. So to the people of Jesus' day, the talent also carried a time implication. People generally talked about a talent as representing 20 years of labor, which was essentially a lifetime. So whether it's a lifetime of labor or $1 million, clearly, a talent is a lot. So, in our parable, a man goes on a journey, and he entrusts 3 of his servants with $5 million, $2 million, and $1 million, respectively, $8 million total. And
as Jesus is telling this parable, right away the people would begin to snicker in disbelief. I mean, that master, he must be out of his mind. Who would entrust servants with that sort of wealth? The next question then is, okay, what did they do with it? What did they do with this windfall of money? Well, what would we do in this situation? Think about yourself. What would we do if our boss or someone came to us and said, you know, my wife and I have just bought an RV, and we're going to travel the country. We're going to spend some time visiting the grandkids. We're going to be gone for a while. We don't know. We'll be back when we're back. So here, take care of my wealth for me, and hands us a duffel bag full of cash. Now, the first servant, the one who was given 5 talents, he takes the money and he does business with it. We don't know what he did. Maybe he invested in a hot real estate deal, or maybe he went out and bought some cryptocurrency. I heard it was hot back then. But it doesn't matter. He worked the money and he doubled it. The second servant, he does the same thing. He doubles his talents from 2 to 4. And I'm thinking, where are these guys when I need some financial advice? The third one, however, he takes a different path. And he chooses not to do any business. No investing, no buying property, no speculating on pork belly futures. He does nothing other than dig a hole in the ground and bury the talent, buries the $1 million. That's all. Dug a hole and buried it. And after a long time, the master of these servants, he returns from his travels and he calls them in for an accounting. He wants to settle up. In the first, he reports how he doubled the money. And the master is pleased with him and he says, "Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You've been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And then the scene is repeated with the second servant, who is also invited into the joy of his master. But then we get to the third servant, the one who buried his talent in the ground. He went out, apparently dug it up. He found it, fortunately. And he comes to the master and he says rather bluntly, "I know that you're a harsh man, and I was afraid. So I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here's what you gave me." And the master's not too happy with this. And he calls this particular servant wicked and lazy and says, "Look, the very least you could have invested it with the bankers and gotten me a little interest. You know, 0.5%'s better than nothing at all." So the master orders that that one talent that had been buried in the ground be taken from the servant and actually given to the one who had 10. So now he's got 11. And then the master says in the parable, "For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have in abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. And as for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And at this point, the parable goes from being a teaching to a commentary on the end times. And the judgment on the money-burying servant is that he is to lose everything, and that he is to be cast aside out into the outer darkness, away, far away from the joy of the master. So as we listen to this parable, we ask the question, why did the third servant bury the money? The other two invested it well. And the answer is given to us. The answer is fear. He says so. He says that he knows that his master is a harsh man who takes what he has not earned. And in his fear, the servant goes out and just hides the money. For him, this was indeed the safest course of action. And yes, it was. He's not going to lose it. There's no risk taking. He'll get it all back. He's done nothing wrong. And the master should be pleased, because after all, the master didn't tell him what to do, just said, here, take care of this. He took care of it, didn't he? It's easy to see this parable as an allegory. And in the allegory, the master is clearly God. And for the third servant, the master is indeed harsh, because that is how the servant chose to view the master. If you believe that God is demanding and judgmental, then that's the God you're going to find, isn't it? But to the other two servants, who are entrusted also with money, the master is trusting and generous. Same person, but two different points of view. That's how they chose to see him. And he hands over to them $7 million, seven talents, and walks away. And they are willing to take a risk with the money, and the risk pays off. However, if they had lost the money, do you think the master would have responded negatively? Doesn't matter. They do not fear the master. Our sermon today is the start of a series on money, because this is the time of year, as Frank explained, that churches turn to their members to make a financial pledge to the church for the coming year. And that makes this an especially appropriate time to talk about money. And I've invited more of you who will come and do as Frank did and speak about why it is that they willingly give to the church. Giving is not just a means to support the church and its ministries. Giving is also an expression of our relationship with God, a sign of our joy for God's love. Clearly, God has blessed us all. And so do we choose to take the gifts in our lives, but in fear do nothing? Or do we take the gifts in our lives and invest them in the ministries of the church, in the work of God's kingdom, in the name of God's love? What we find in this parable is that when we view God as love, then the risks are minimized, and the gifts of God will always multiply. This parable is also about waiting. As we wait for the day of the Lord, the day when the God will return, when Christ will return, however that may look, how is it that do we wait? Do we take what God has given us and bury it in the sand? Or do we take what God has given us and work God's will with it? In our parable, the servants are servants of the master. They are extensions of him, of his household, of his work. And in his absence, they become his representatives to the world. As God's people, we too are extensions of God. We are to be extensions of God's work in this world. Matthew made it clear to his people that God's kingdom is accompanied by the feeding of the hungry, by curing the sick, by blessing the meek, by serving the least, by doing God's work. I'm still haunted by the story of that buried money found in New Jersey. I want to know, who buried it? Why did they bury it? How did it become lost and forgotten? And did the loss of that money, $44,000, not an insubstantial amount, did the loss of that money hurt that family? Well, the story is not unlike Jesus' parable, is it? Yes, the money was buried, likely in a time of fear, but by burying the money, the one who buried it lost everything. 90 years later, that money was indeed given to somebody else. And in the same way, the servant in the parable who buried the talent, he risked nothing, but indeed, he lost everything. His money was taken from him, and he was banished to the outer darkness. Here in the church today, the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we driven by fear, or are we driven by joy? Do we choose to take the road that leads to the outer darkness, where there is pain and despair? Or do we choose the path of God's love, a path that brings us into the realm of joy? How is it that we choose to use our talents? Amen.